Okay, good evening. Welcome to Bible Building Blocks. And our goal is to learn Parshas Vayera today. But there's one aspect of Parshas Lech Lecha which we did not finish. We talked about last week Lech Lecha, the 10 tests of Avram begin. The first 6 tests are discussed. And then in the middle, something that's out of order, and I don't want to get into why, but there's a very significant few verses there, which is known as, in Hebrew, called the Bris Bein HaBesorim, in English called the Covenant Between the Parts, where Avram and God make a covenant, where Avram takes a number of animals, and they cut them in half, and put them aside, and Avram walks through, and it's like an oath between him and God. And this covenant took place when Avram was 70 years old. It's in your last week's notes. When Avram was 70 years old, which is really, the rabbis tell us, before the beginning of Parshas Lech Lecha. Because he didn't leave till he was 75. It appears from the Medrash that Avram made 2 trips to Israel. 2 aliyahs. An earlier aliyah, and for whatever reasons, we're not sure. I'm not going to say unsuccessful, but he went back home. And then the final aliyah that made it 75 years old. In the middle of the parsha, and there's a rule to know, the Torah does not go in order. It's not a sequential order. It's more themes as opposed to order. And, you know, for an overview class, we're not getting into great detail, but it's an important event that I can't let go by, where God makes, really, before he even first time goes to the land of Canaan, at the age of 70, God makes a promise to him that he will have the land, A, B, he will have children as many of the stars. Very important concept. He reveals to him, when he says you'll have the land. So Avram asks him a question. How do I know? How will I be certain? A little bit of a lack of faith, a little for Avram on his level. And therefore God makes the covenant with him to say, don't worry, it's going to be. But then God says, but you got to realize that the Jews are going to be strangers in a foreign land. And it's going to be, and he says, they're going to be strangers for 400 years in a strange land. But then I will take them out and I will redeem them. So that's a very important promise. Everybody knew about this promise. This was a famous promise. And therefore, as we go through the parshas, we'll see that Avram knows that it's not yet the time. And it will be many, many years. The Jews will have to go through a lot. His descendants will have to go through a lot of suffering in Egypt. And only after they come out of Egypt will they be able to enter the land of Israel. And he's told it's 400 years. And there's some discrepancies because really it wasn't 400. It was 430 years. So the rabbis explain it's 400 years from the birth of Isaac, which took place 30 years later. But this was a very significant covenant. This was God's assurance that you will have the land. Your children will one day occupy the land, but there's going to be a lot of suffering on the way in a land that's not theirs, and they will be oppressed. But eventually they will leave with a great bounty, and I will punish the people who did these things to them. And this is all mentioned in the Haggadah, by the way. When you'll see the Haggadah, these verses will come up. When we talk about, we say Baruch, there's a part in the Haggadah where it specifically repeats this Bris Bein HaBesorim. And then we lift up our cup and say V'hi Sha'am Da Lavaseinu. That part in the Haggadah where we pick our cups up and say V'hi Sha'am Da, V'hi Sha'am Da. That's referring to this covenant between the parts. This promise is what stood us up throughout all the exiles of history. So that's a very important point, and it's referred to many times, so you should be aware of it, that this covenant took place. It's mentioned in this parsha. It's out of order, though. It's at the age of Avram being 70. And the patriarchs knew, and that will explain a lot of the behavior of the patriarchs, where they didn't push the envelope to bring redemption, because they knew redemption was not as quick as they had wanted it to be, and there would be time much later till it would come. So I just wanted to put that in because it's an important piece of information. You shouldn't go through the book of Bereishis without knowing such an occurrence. It's a famous one.
So when Abraham's promised it will be as large as stars in the sky, but we also learn there will always be small in number, huh?
Okay, that's a good question. What does it mean? What does God mean when there will be as many as the stars? And on the other hand, we are few in number. So I don't know if we have a chumash. Do we have a full chumash up there?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting. If you look carefully in the text, it's very interesting. Good question. If you look in the text, He says like this, Habet na shamayim. He says, go outside, Habet na shamayim, look in the heavens, Usfora kochavim, and count the stars, Imtucha lispar osam, if you're able to count them. Vayomer lo, he says, in koyezecha, that will be, your children will be like this. So, number one, we could say, be like the stars, not necessarily so much in number, but in terms of what stars do. Stars are incredible luminaries, but from a distance. And the Jewish people will be like the stars, not in quantity, but in quality. The rabbis also say, he says, go out and try to count the stars, which is an impossible task. But if God tells Abraham to do an impossible task, what does he do? He does it. So he starts counting the stars. So he says, guess what? Your children will be the same. What do we mean? Your children won't be afraid to do impossible tasks either. I'm telling you, go and count the stars, and he starts counting. But he knows it's not going to come, but if God told me to do it, I do it. Same thing, Jews will always be like that. So we're like the stars in terms of, and it's much more, it's much deeper. We know that the stars mystically, when God sends his energies to create realities, there's many steps, spiritual worlds that it travels through, emanates, and constrains itself till the changes come down in this earth. The final gateway between the spiritual realm and the physical realm is the stars, is the zodiac. The zodiac will be postured in a way to impact in this world based on God's will of his energies going through. That's why there was, not anymore, there was the art of astrology, where if you could see the stars, you could know what's going to happen because they are aligned in a way as God dictated them to be to create certain realities. So the stars do affect this world, but not independently of God. It's just reflecting the energies that are going through various worlds, and now it comes out, and that's why every month certain patterns are strong, are dominant, and that's why certain things happen. Constellations are dominant. And that's why certain things happen. That's why God designed the world in such a way. So now the stars, if we look at it from the natural cause and effect post God's will, the stars impact on this world as God wills it. But the truth of the matter is, it's not, the real stars are the Jewish people. Because when the Jewish people do good things, remember we said it's like a chain effect all the way to the top? And if we do good things, we rattle the chain in a positive way all the way to the highest realms, and then it shakes down based on that. So really, the real stars are us. You see, that's what it means we're like the stars. Our power is like the stars. Even though the stars are what makes things happen down here, but that's only after it's gone through the chain, and ultimately the top of the chain is affected by what Jews do it down here. So we are like the stars. And that's why, you know, the great irony of life is the Jews are who are supposed to be stars. And if they abuse that beautiful privilege, they become movie stars. And they affect the world in a negative way. It's not a coincidence that they call them stars. It's not, and who founded, Hollywood? It was Jews. So it's one of the ironies of life. The Jews who are supposed to really be the stars in the spiritual sense, when they don't live up to their potential, they're still stars, but unfortunately in a negative way. And they do impact the world. The movie stars can become governors and wealthy people and even make cultural suggestions, as you found in the news today. Another negative step for morality happened when a lord is able to, in such a public way, demonstrate his alternative lifestyle in public. It makes a big impact in a negative way to our world. So I'm not going to say his name on the tape, and I'm sure if you've seen the news, you know what I'm talking about. If not, just click on to any news tonight, you'll know. Anyway, it was in England, not here. So that's what it means. We're like the stars. We're mamish. We are like the stars, right? And we learn from that as well that even though the stars can dictate what happens, God says to Avram, because Avram was afraid. He says, "I'm not having any kids." And I looked in the stars. We're not destined. Me and Sarah are not destined to have stars. So God said, "Come outside," but he already was outside. So what are you going outside for? Go outside from the influence of the stars. You are no longer to be influenced by the stars, but rather you influence the stars. And when you do certain behaviors, that will change your realities. And that's why we learn a principle, Ein Mazal LeYisrael. The Jews are never controlled by the stars. The rest of the world is, but the Jews are not. And even if naturally we should have a disaster come our way, and the stars are saying there should be a disaster, if the Jews pray and do good deeds, we can either dodge the bullet, or we can change the reality of what that constellation setup would determine. So that's a very important thing that we were taught, and that starts with Avram, that we're not in controlled by the constellations, but rather we control the constellations. It's a very important point.
Dust of the earth.
There's particles. Can you count? All right. So there's a lot of discussions. You know, at times we're compared to stars, and times we're compared to dust. Dust. It's hard to count the dust either, right? The difference is dust. Yeah, is stepped upon. So when we don't follow the will of God, we're like the dust of the earth that they step up all over us and trample all over us. And usually, dust is together. You notice dust is usually together, right? Right? While stars are separated, which usually hints to the fact that whenever we're stepped on and we're in trouble, Jews stick together. And when we're not, when we're way on top and things are going great, stars are very far apart from each other. Up in the sky, it looks close, but really they're millions of miles away. When things are going well and we're on top, we seem to distance ourselves from each other. But when we're stepped upon, we seem to be quite together. When we went to the gas chambers, God forbid, we all went together to the gas chambers. But when all of a sudden Jews are affluent and we're on the top, we divide amongst ourselves and find it difficult to be. And division isn't necessarily bad, but if it goes to an extreme, then it could be a problem. Anyway, that's all, as they say, old business. And now let's move on with the new business for today. So we're on the new sheet. Parshas Vayera. I'm getting better every week. I'm adding little points. And see, right away, I'm giving you the years of this Parsha. Starts from the year 2047 of creation. It begins when Avram's 99 years old. And this Parsha moves 38 years forward to the year 2085. The overall theme, we finished the first six tests of Avram. Now we come to the next four tests of Avram. Last week's Parsha, Avram moves from Avram, the non-Jew, to become Avraham, the Jew, upon his circumcision. Now the tests make him into a Jew. This week's Parsha moves him from being a Jew to becoming a patriarch. And specifically, he accomplishes by perfecting the attribute of kindness, of chesed. Avram is the pillar of kindness. And through his kindness, he becomes the first patriarch. Remember, the patriarch, Avram was the first one to understand that if there is a God in the world, and God is perfect, and God, by definition, what is the first characteristic that God manifests into this world? Kindness. The whole creation of the world was a kindness. God did not need to create the world. He wasn't lacking anything. He's a perfect being. If he created the world, we may not know ultimately in his notes up in Shemayim, in heaven, why he really, really did it. But from our perspective, as the beneficiaries of a created world, we can only understand it as a total kindness on God's part. And Avram understood if there is a God, God wants us to be in this world to be beneficiaries of that kindness, and the only way we can do that is by emulating God. And Avram understands that he has to work and develop and become the paradigm of kindness. And this Parsha is the paradigm of kindness. The words of the Parsha is Vayera. God appears to Avram. It's the third day after the circumcision. It is the most painful day of the circumcision. He's a 99-year-old man. He's not a spring chicken, okay? He's just had a surgery on himself. He's in his tent. And God says, you know, I have to visit the sick. Vayera Hashem. Hashem appears to Avram and he visits the sick. Avram's having a prophetic moment. Hashem's very close to him. He's closer to him than he ever was before. Now he's a Jew. He's totally complete. The spiritual feeling is unbelievable. And yet Avram is extremely disturbed and distressed. Where do we find Avram as the parsha begins? He's standing at the door of the tent. And what is he so disturbed about? There are no visitors. There are no visitors. Why are there no visitors? Well, God figured he just had a circumcision. He doesn't want Avram to be bothered so much. So God made it the hottest day in the record of history. The hottest day. It was so hot, so no wayfarers traveled. Nobody goes by. Avram's looking, there's no guests. He's beside himself. He says, how can a day go by where I'm not being godly, where I'm not being kind? Now, this is a very important concept, not to be confused with mercy. There's a big difference between a personality like Avram and a personality like Job, who, according to many opinions, lived around this time, this era of the world. Job, we know about the sufferings of Job, but we don't know about him ever being a patriarch. But Avram, we know, is a patriarch. What's the difference? The answer is like this. Job, when he had guests, he'd ask his guests, what are you used to eating? So if the guest was used to eating chves, chicken, he gave him chicken. If the guest was used to eating steak, he gave him steak. Whatever. Whatever the guy's used to eating, he gave him. Avram didn't ask him what he's used to giving, as we'll see shortly. He gave him everything. What's the difference? Job was a merciful person. A merciful person says, oi, I see you're missing something. You're missing something. I will fill in what you're missing. Mercy is more of a reactive attribute. Somebody's hungry. He's at the door. How can I turn him away? Which is nice, which is wonderful. But that's not chesed. That's not kindness. Kindness is a proactive attribute. A kind person, the way we understand it, and we know Jews have three characteristics. One is merciful, but the second is kind. A kind person doesn't wait for a merciful situation to come. The kind person says, I have to be proactive and give. I have to look for opportunities to give. Because me as a human being, to be a godly person means I don't wait for someone needs, but rather my essence needs to give, just like God. God didn't wait for an opportunity. He created the opportunity. Truth is, there were no opportunities. There was no world. God created a world so he could give. And therefore, mankind has to realize not to sit back and wait for the opportunities, but to create the situations of kindness and giving. A lot of us are happy if nobody knocks on the door and asks for charity. I got a day off. Baruch Hashem. Someone like Avram says, nobody knocked on the door. I'm going on the internet. I'm going to find a worthy charity and email money to people. That's what Avram would do if he lived today. He says, so therefore, he just has the circumcision. Nobody's coming. He's beside himself. He hasn't been able to do kindness. And the Torah goes to great lengths to go in this beginning of the parasha to detail after detail what happens. So what happens is, so God's got a problem now. His plan backfires, so to speak. So what does God do? He sends three angels dressed up as Arabs to pass by. Avram sees them and he runs with the circumcision and all. Can you imagine? He's running. Can you imagine if you had a hernia operation, right? And the third day after hernia operation, you just start running. You know, and the medicine is like, he's bleeding as he's running. But this is I can't miss this opportunity. He could pass by. He brings them in. He says, please, can you come by and have a little something to eat, please? And they say, okay. And they come in. And he gives them water to wash themselves up, a little cheese, just to eat something right off the bat. And then he goes and sends Yishmael to get a good piece of, to get the cows, the oxen. And he cuts Shech's three oxen so he can give them all three pickled tongues. Like the unbelievable repast. He makes an unbelievable meal for these guys. And the Torah is detailing every point because this is the ultimate of kindness. He has every excuse in the book not to have to be busy with this today. And if you look in the psukim, it goes into such detail. Anything they wanted, he took care of them. And on the other hand, he always wouldn't push himself on people. He always would kind of like stand on the side as if it was like he wasn't doing anything. And people would just enjoy the meals. So this was a very important activity here, because now we see Avram emerges after the circumcision. He's a complete person now. Every action is 100% perfect. This is a 100% perfect act of hospitality to guests. And we will see how this becomes an important thing in Avram's life, and how the rest of the tests are balancing and testing, does he have 100% kindness in his life? As we know from the spheros, of the seven lower spheros, the way, the characteristics of how God acts, the first of the lower spheros is chesed, is kindness. This is the first pillar of the patriarchs that's going to happen. This kindness will offset the negativity of the previous generations that skewed kindness in a negative way, which we'll talk about more as we go on, in terms of immorality. Immorality, which was the earlier generations of terrible people, the generation of the flood, impacted the world in a terrible way. It brought so much immorality into this world. And therefore, what had to be? We needed someone who had to reverse the cycle. And the opposite, immorality is chesed gone awry. Chesed is you do kindness, but you're supposed to do kindness to others. But you could take kindness and skew it and just do it for yourself. And the ultimate kindness for yourself is immorality. So Avram would have to correct that that skewed form of kindness to develop true kindness. And this is what Avram does. And this story highlights this. Every single action he did was a reflection of that. There was a hand up. Yeah?
When he performed kindness, is it mentioned that he got pleasure out of it?
It doesn't say anything about how he felt, because what he felt is immaterial. Certainly, I'm sure he gets pleasure acting in a godly way, but not a pleasure, so to speak, with an agenda. A lot of us, many people, do kindness because now they figure people owe me now. They'll be indebted to me. But when Avram did it, he does it for one reason, because this brings out the godliness in him. One of the godly virtues is kindness. Kindness in a way where you're not even noticed in the picture. And Avram says, if I can act like God, that's the greatest thing I can do. That's the greatest thing a human being can do, is to be godly. Not just to do a kindness, but to be a kind person. And just like God's kindness, for example, God does so much kindness, but is he heavy-handed with the kindness? Does he push you into recognizing his kindness? No, he does it in the background. Every minute he's being kind to us, but we don't even aware of it. Right? We're not even aware of it. I mean, shouldn't he by right be able to stamp on your forehead, made in heaven? Would that be asking too much? Right on your forehead. Make a brand, made in heaven. I made you. He'd be entitled, but he creates a world in such a way that I don't even notice what he's doing. That he's so hidden in his kindness. That's the ultimate kindness. The ultimate kindness. See, when you do kindness to someone, what is always a potential problem when you do kindness to someone? As much as you want to be good to somebody, there's something hand in hand that conflicts with that. Think about it. Who are the people that hurt you the most in life? Are usually the people you're the kindest to. Right? Did you ever notice that? Why is that so? There's a reason for that. The reason is, every time I do a kindness, the recipient feels uncomfortable. Feels uncomfortable. As if to say, you know, I'm such a nebuch, I needed this guy to help me. And of course, on the one hand, they're thankful, they're appreciative. Can you imagine a guy, you have a neighbor who the bank's gonna foreclose on his house, he needs 50,000 cash right away. And he has no idea how, he can't get it. And he doesn't have a lot of money. And you come in as Sir Gallant, and say, here, no problem, little guy. Here's a check for $50,000. I saved your neck. right? And of course say, thank you, thank you, thank you. But in the back of your mind you're saying, you know what? I couldn't even stand on my own 2 feet. And every time I look at that guy, it reminds me that I couldn't stand on my own 2 feet. And although they're happy that you helped them, but subconsciously, they're upset with you. Because you always will your existence, your kindness reminds them of their inadequacy. And that's why it's not unusual that when you do kindness to people, many times they will lash back at you. Because you remind them of their inadequacy. There's always this problem. Whenever you're kind, you're making the other person uncomfortable. You're not trying to, but you're making the other person uncomfortable. Do you understand? Do you understand what's going on? And that's why it's not unusual. You can help people so much, and then all of a sudden, they'll turn on you viciously. Why is that so? Because your existence reminds them of their inadequacy. So that's a catch-22 in every kindness. So what happens? So Avram, he learned how to deal with that. How can you deal with it? Try to do the kindness in a way that the recipient doesn't know you did it. If the recipient doesn't know you did it, or you make it as if it was like nothing, you really hardly did anything for them, then he doesn't really feel like he owes you. And you make it seem like he's doing him a favor. Like Avram. Avram probably tells these guys, you know, come on, you know, come here, you know. I'm making a big barbecue party anyway. I don't know what I'm going to do with all the food. I'm going to have to throw it away. It's going to be a sin and God's going to punish me. Help me out. Could you eat some of the food, please? Do me a favor. You see, that was the Avram approach. If you look in the Chumash, in the first 5-6 psukim, his name isn't even mentioned. You don't see the word Avram. It says a he, and he ran, and he saw, and he didn't. It doesn't say his name. To teach us that he made himself as obscure as possible when he was doing the kindness. He says, here, you know, I'm busy with a lot of other people. Here, just sit down, help me out, and you know, the burgers are on the grill already. You know, just help yourself, you know. I'm gonna get so fat if I have to eat it all myself. You're doing me the biggest favor. Right? So that's the kind of person Avram was. How did he learn? He learned that from God. Because when God did all this kindness, he's hidden. We don't even see the kindness that he does. He's so clever, God, and the kindness that he does, it's so obscured we can't even tell it's there. And Avram said, if that's what God, way God does kindness, that's the way I'm supposed to do kindness. And that's the way we have to learn how to do kindness. If you know a person, let's say, is poor, so you don't just give him money. I mean, you do, but that's not the highest level. There's ways you can be very clever. You know, you could, for example, go to them and say, you know, come to their door. There's a true story. I'll give you an example. True story. There was a person when they were in Kollel, and they were all struggling, but there was one particular family that was very poor, but extremely, proud. So what would the guy do? He'd go to the store. He'd buy tuna. Full price. Before he came home, he'd go in his backyard. He'd throw the cans on the floor so they'd be dented. Right? Like 50 cans he dents. So he goes to the friend now, says, you know, I was in the store, there was a big sale on tuna, because the cans were dented, it's a fraction of the cost. So I bought myself a lot. I figured I'd buy some for you, you'd probably want to buy them. So instead of $2, it's like 40 cents a can. So the guy now buys 50 cans at 40 cents a can, he's saving, you know, I don't know, $60-$70. I just slept the cancer, but they were on sale anyway, right? The guy never knew. And this way, he did a kindness to him, he didn't even know he did the kindness for him. Right? That's the kind of kindnesses we're talking about.
He probably said, you know, pay me the 40 cents so you don't feel that you're,
Yes, he asked for the 40 cents.
Yeah, and he pays for it, but the guy makes, and so it's like he didn't do, okay, you bought a lot, I'll take them off your hands. You know, he probably said, you know, I bought too many, I don't need so many, can you take some off my hands? Oh, I'll do you a favor, but really he did him the favor, and he never knew it. Right? Those are the kind, there's 8 levels of charity, says the Rambam. The lowest level of charity is you give it insultingly. And then there's higher levels. You give with a smile. You give and he doesn't know who received. You know, the giver doesn't know who the receiver is. The receiver doesn't know who the giver is. They both know who it is. You give in a, that's why we give in a pushka. We give in a pushka. We give over here because you don't know who's really getting it. And the guy who's getting it doesn't know who gets it. That's pretty good. But the highest level of charity is what? find the guy a job. Right? Find the guy a job. That's the highest level of charity, because then he doesn't feel like he got anything from you. Because you enable him to work, and he's doing it himself. So Avram's the paradigm of this kind of kindness. And that's critical to found the Jewish world. And that's how he's so successful in reaching out to other people. Because people who don't believe in God, what's the best way to get them to believe in God is to see how godly a human being can behave. And what are people most responsive to? Kindness. So when they saw the kindness of Avram, they could see the godliness in Avram, that would enable other people to feel that there's something special. Right? When Avram would have guests, so what happened? The guests would eat a whole meal. And then they're finished with the meal. They say, you know, Avram, thank you so much for the meal. And Avram would say, don't thank me. Thank the Creator. This is, excuse me, what's that? And he starts explaining. There's a Creator. He created the world. He brought the rain. He made the food. All this. So just pray, thank God, and say Brachat HaMazon. And if somebody said no, I would say, okay, you don't want to thank the Creator? Fine. Then I'll charge you. I'll charge you. And he sends him a bill for dinner. $10,000 bill. He says, what's this? He says, this is the middle of the desert. You know how expensive a steak is in the middle of the desert? Glass of water in the middle of the desert, no waste in the middle of the desert. This is the bill. If you want to pay, this is the bill. Guy says, you know what? I'd rather thank your God. Right? And that's what Avram was all about. So unbelievable kindness. Once he shows, so now, he really, these were not Arabs. They were angels. And three angels came, each one with a separate mission. One angel came to heal Avraham. That was the Malach Raphael. The angel of healing came to bring energies of healing for Avram. Another one was the Malach Michal, the one who brings news. And he would bring the news that a year from now, Sarah will have a child. And when Sarah heard that, she laughed. And she laughed, not that she didn't believe it, but she said it's very unusual. And we'll see later, that's where the name Yitzchak comes from. It comes from the word Tzchok, which is laughter, which we'll have to talk about a little bit later. And then finally, the third angel came along to destroy the city of Sodom, which is coming up on their itinerary. All right? So this is the opening section. Critical, a very good character description of Avram and his kindness. And what we have coming down the line. Yeah?
Did he have any deficiencies or that are common to the Torah?
Avram?
Yeah.
He had a few deficiencies. The Talmud extracts from the Talmud, from the Chumash, certain deficiencies. We mentioned last week when he went to Egypt, as he passes the second test, it would have been better for him not to have gone to Egypt. He should have stayed in Israel. That was one deficiency. At the covenant between the parts, when God promised the Jews would have the land, he said, how do I know? How can I be so sure? It was a little bit of a mistake. He had a few minor flaws, like everyone had. You always have to remember something. This is very hard for us to appreciate. You know, before the patriarchs came in the world, it was a pagan world. There was no such thing as menschlichkeit. There was no such thing as good qualities. It didn't exist. The human race was animalistic. No morality. There were rational animals. There was none. There was no such thing as kindness.
So people weren't kind.
They weren't kind. Like, we are so taking everything for granted what Avram did to change the world. I mean, there are certain places in the world that have not been affected by monotheism or anything. And you can see what kind of animals they are. There's certain parts of the world which will remain unnamed. But I'm sure some of you guys might know, right? Where they live like animals. There's like no morals at all, right? So it was a world where there was zero morality. So that Avram, it's a revolutionary idea, this idea called kindness. Good mitos. Was totally, it's like pretend you're in a zoo with animals and you're trying to train them to be kind. That's what Avram had. He came up with the concept to be kind. So guess what? Since he's blazing a path, he can't perfect it all. Right? So, to what we says, I could have done better than Avram. Yeah, you could have done better after, you know, thousands of years of Judaism and thousands of years of Jews being kind and this and that and right, you know, and making mistakes and learning from their mistakes, this and that. And now you sit pretty looking back 3,000, 4,000 years in retrospect. You live in a civilized world. Avram was not in a civilized world. It's easy to go on a path after somebody blazes the trail for you. But blazing the trail is unbelievably difficult. And that's why it's so hard to imagine their contribution. The contribution was unbelievable to go to a world of animals, human animals, and to teach them kindness. So of course, he'll make a few mistakes along the way. It's inevitable. And of course, that causes the perfection of the world to take a little bit longer. That's why he needed a Yitzchak and a Yaakov to develop it further and further and further. So we really don't appreciate what Avram did in his contribution to civilization. Yeah? It was a hand?
Sorry.
Yeah?
Why was this not considered one of Avram's tests?
This is not a test because it wasn't... Remember, the rule of the tests are it has to be something that's illogical and more so, it has to go against his nature.
The illogical is true.
No, so the circumcision was the test. Because that was the illogical thing. Because having the circumcision, he was afraid he'd be different than everybody. He couldn't do kindness to them anymore. Now he's just recovering. Avram loves to do kindness. So here, there's no test for him. This fits right into what he likes to do. He always liked to do kindness in the last parsha. But he was growing in it. After the circumcision, where he's a whole person now, now he perfects it. So this was, you can imagine, something you're good at doing, you know, let's say you're good at number, you're a good accountant, right? You're a good accountant. So somebody gives you a very complex account. Really complex. Wouldn't call it a test. You'd call it a challenge I really look forward to doing to see how good of an accountant I am. But go ask an accountant, please don't take it the wrong way, go ask an accountant to draw art.
Which is
the totally other side of the brain, right? Like, that would be a test. Go spend 8 hours drawing a picture. You're going to go out of his mind. I can't do it, right? So for Avram to do a kindness, even if it's a heroic kindness, it was a kindness that was beyond nature. It was the hottest day of the year. So it was an extreme kindness. Okay, extreme kindness, but not a test. A test is you're doing something you really don't want to do. Something he wanted to do, and look how far he would go to do it. Okay, so now, yeah.
Two questions. I'm trying to.
This is going to be a 2 week parsha. That's a good, good,
I'm
good.
Differentiate between kindness and mercy.
So okay, you want to differentiate between kindness and mercy.
Kindness would be giving tzedakah. Mercy would be giving money to a beggar on the street. Is that correct?
Mercy is when your emotions are aroused to repair the deficiency that you see in front of you that causes you pain. It hurts me to see this beggar in tattered clothes. How can I eat dinner tonight knowing that this guy is starving? Now that's good. That's a good quality. It's one of the three Jewish qualities. You know, if you didn't have that, you'd really be a wicked person, right? But if you don't see the beggar, you don't feel the deficiency, it doesn't dawn on you to do a kindness to anybody. Kindness means I have to give. I have this desire to give. And if I don't see it, I'm gonna look for somebody. Right? Kindness is an expansive feeling. You wanna go beyond yourself. How do I go beyond myself? I help others. Mercy isn't expansive. Mercy is just, how do I remove the pain that's in my gut? Right? It's a big, big difference, right? So for example, a merciful person sees you don't have dinner, he gives you dinner. A kind person, what happens if a kind person sees the guy at the door? A kind person says, here, I'm gonna give you dinner. Now, here's $100 for the next week. I know you didn't ask me for it, but here's $100 for the rest of the week. That's the kind person. Because kind person doesn't wait to be asked. He goes beyond. I only have to give him a, he's starving. Okay, now I give him a good meal. He's not starving. Now go on your way. Yeah, but the kind person says, but I didn't really do anything proactive. So he says, here's $100. You have a meal for the next week. Whatever. That's the difference. The kind person gives before he's asked. Okay?
Second one. Was the third angel's name, by any chance, Gavriel?
The third angel's name was Gavriel. These are very good Jewish names. Gavriel, Michael, and Raphael. Those were the three angels that visited Avraham, and they carried these energies. Now that God sees that there's such a paradigm of kindness, now the angels, they leave Avram, and they say, a year from today, you will have a child. And this was Erev Pesach. Yitzchak was born on Pesach. Yitzchak was born on Pesach, okay? Now, one angel leaves. The angel had to give the information. He's no longer needed. I'm sorry?
But this was before that was Pesach.
Okay, so he's asking a good question. He's asking a good question. What do you mean Pesach? Pesach didn't happen for 400 years till they came out of Egypt. Which leads us to a very, I wasn't going to mention it, but now that you asked it, you got to understand. When we say we celebrate Pesach because the Jews went out of Egypt, that's the wrong answer. We talked about this morning. Jewish history doesn't go from past to future, but rather from future to past. What does it mean? We don't celebrate Pesach because the Jews went out of Egypt, now there's a holiday of Pesach. No. The answer really is because there's a holiday of Pesach, that's why the Jews went out of Egypt. What's that? I'll say it again. Because there's a holiday of Pesach, the Jews went out of Egypt. What does that mean? So let's take a secular holiday. Let's take a secular holiday and try to understand that. Let's take a good secular holiday in the United States. The last Thursday in November is Thanksgiving, right? So why do, or better yet, let's do better. July 4th, okay? Why do they celebrate July 4th? Because in 1776, these guys signed the Declaration of Independence, and that was the first step towards freedom for Americans. So because of that act, every year we commemorate that, and we remember the past. All right, that's the non-Jewish way of celebrating holidays. It's a nice thing. Nothing wrong with it.
That's not a religious holiday.
Okay, so we'll do a religious holiday. So we'll talk about this week, December 25th, allegedly, the father of the religion was born at that time, right? And so now every year, they remember that. They remember that's what happened at the beginning of the religion. All right, in Judaism, it's not, the Jews happened to go out of Egypt on the 15th day of Nisan. So every year, we commemorate the fact that they went out. That's not the way it works. When God created the world from day one, God put holy energies into certain days of the year. And God said, the month of Nisan, which is the month of spring, and the middle of the month, which is the strongest part of the month, when the moon is full, the greatest, what's spring? Spring is renewal. Renewal, rebirth. God says, every year on the 15th of Nisan, I send holy energies into this world. That if anybody really wants to renew himself and to become free, that person can tap into energies of freedom. That was from the first day of creation. And there's many stories that happened before the Exodus of great heroic freedom acts that happened. Cain and Hevel purportedly brought their korbanos on the 15th of Nisan, day of freedom. Okay, when Avram fought the four kings, it was Pesach night. Miraculous things happened before even. In other words, that's a day that if you want to access energies of freedom and you work on it, you can gain understandings and feelings of freedom in your life. And the physical world reflects that. For the whole winter, the earth was a slave to the snow and the cold and couldn't expand. All of a sudden, you come to Pesach time, everything's in bloom. It's just, you know, in Eretz Yisrael, it's green. What happened? The whole world woke up. The whole world is free. And you too can be free today. So now, we don't gotta wait for a historical event. It just happens. So now they come to Avram and say, you know what, what can be more enslaving to know that you have no perpetuity? Right? I'm finished. I'm tied up. When I die, I'm finished. If you know you're going to have a kid, then you're expanded. You break out of the chains of death because something lives beyond you. So the angel comes on the night of Pesach and says, you're going to be a free man. You're going to have a child. And Yitzchak's born a year later on Pesach night. The Medrash tells us, and last week's Parsha, when the four kings were captured, Lot, and Avram was informed that Lot was taken captive, it said, what was Avram doing then? He was baking matzahs. He was baking matzahs 400 plus years before he was on out of Egypt, because the energy's there. And Avram knew that. So now, fast forward 40 years later, when the Jews have to go out of Egypt, it's no coincidence that they had to go out on that day, the 15th of Nisan, because that's the day of freedom. Right? So that's why Avram, who was a smart guy, he could intuit there's a God and a creator and this, he looks at the world, he looks at springtime, he understood from himself concepts of Torah. He says there has to be something like Pesach.
So what happened later?
What do you mean what happened later?
After the time situation, what, anything else happened that?
Yeah, if you look, you know, I don't have time now. Go on the Haggadah. Right at the end of the Haggadah, there's a whole song says, Vayehi b'chatzi halayla, and it was in the middle of the night. And it lists about a dozen events that happened throughout history of miracles that happened on Pesach night. Look in the Haggadah. It's towards the end. It's by the part where most people are either sleeping already or flying through. You say it on the first night of Pesach. Second night, you say a different song. A song. It was at midnight. It lists a whole bunch of things that happened on Pesach night. Before the Exodus, after the Exodus, all kinds of miracles happened. Tisha B'Av is the opposite. Tisha B'Av is a very negative day, and all kinds of calamities happen on Tisha B'Av.
Can't do anything.
Same concept, same concept. Okay, good. So now that we did point one, this is such a great parsha. You can't do it in 1 week. It's so delicious. Parsha's Vayera.
You can do it in 2 weeks.
Right? So now we come. Now one angel goes back. He's finished his job. Two angels are left. One to destroy Sodom. And the one that healed Avram is going to have a double mission, but it's the same idea. He's going to have to save Lot. So now they come to visit Sodom. And the angels come. We know Lot, the nephew of Avram, lives in Sodom. And Sodom had a lot of laws, and they were all very anti-chesed laws. Whatever Avram was, Sodom was the opposite. Sodom was the kind of place, there were laws printed up. First law, you shall not have guests. He who has guests is put to death. Now Sodom was a very rich, wealthy piece of land. It was in the valley where you see, now we don't see that now. Now it's the Dead Sea, and it's all, it's after the destruction. But you go a little bit further north, the lush green areas of the valley in the Jordan Valley River area is very lush. It was a very wealthy part of the world. It was a very busy metropolis. All kinds of travel was going to Sodom. It was like the Las Vegas of the ancients. Something like to that effect, can you imagine? So it was a very, very, very busy place. And then rules. A lot of guests came. You cannot be nice to guests. If you take a guest in your house, there were special beds. And the bed was one size fits all. So if the guy that your guest's legs were a little bit too long, one size fits all. You cut his legs down to fit the bed. If his legs were too short, you stretch his legs till they fit the size of the bed. There were all kinds of terrible, terrible laws, anti-social. For themselves, they were nice to all the Sodomites. But a guest, forget it. Those are the laws. Terrible, terrible laws.
They expect me to believe that. They cut your legs off because
yeah.
of the bed because your legs were too long?
Yes.
They have guests in the
first just chop them up a little
bit. No, they were terrible, terrible people. You remember, this were... These were pagans. These were savages. Intellectual savages. Intellectual savages. And there's a number of interesting stories that happened. So anyway, so God comes down to take a look and says, "We got to destroy this country. They're the exact opposite of Avram. And just like we said before with Noach, that we couldn't have a whole world being so terrible. Noach isn't going to survive, right? He had to destroy the whole world. So now he's not going to destroy the whole world. He promised not going to do that. But this generation of Sodom is so corrupt and so influential. I've been patient with them for 26 years, God says. And it's getting worse and worse than this. And then there were some abominable acts. The Medrash talks about what they did. And God said, that's the end. There was one kind woman. There was a beggar who came to Sodom. And usually what happens, beggars would die very quickly because nobody gives them anything. And you notice this beggar, he's not dying. So what happened? They noticed that every day, a woman, a particular woman, would go over when she was drawing water and would clandestinely give a little bread to the beggar. And they caught her. And they punished her. And how did they punish her? They tied her up to a post, smeared her body with honey, and let the bees attack her till they killed her. God says, that's the last straw. That's the last straw. And I'm going to destroy you. So the angels come down to destroy Sodom. But they have one mission still to do. They got a rescue mission. They got to get Lot out of there. They got to get Lot out of there. As bad as the Sodomites were, remember, Lot's a descendant of Avram. So they coming, and Lot sees two guests. So what is, he doesn't know they're angels. What does Lot do? He invites them into his house, just like he learned in Avram's house. But he wasn't the same like Avram. Avram would kind of lay back and he wouldn't know he's doing it all. Lot would do the kindness, but would make it very clear that he was doing all the kindnesses. So they kind of felt uncomfortable. As a matter of fact, they said to Lot, no, it's okay, we could stay in the street. Can you imagine if let's say you lived in New York, you know, when Central Park was Central Park, you know, and let's say you live in a great condo in the best part of town, and you get to this beggar and say, you know, how'd you like to spend the night in my condo for the night? You know, no, I'd rather sleep in Central Park. It means he really doesn't want to go to you. Okay, so you can imagine in Sodom, you don't want to be sleeping overnight anywhere. And Lot invites in the house, and he said, no, we don't want to go. We'll sleep in the street. That means they felt very uncomfortable with his kindness. It was kindness, but not Avram's kind of kindness. Anyway, he finally persuades him to come in. He's having a Seder. It's Pesach night, right? He's having a Seder. And the Sodomites find out what's going on. Hey, what's going on? Lot, you're having guests. Knocks on the door. What's going on? We want your guests to come outside. We want to have a little sport with them. We want to have some intimate knowledge of them, say the men. And Lot says, these are my guests. Listen, you can have my daughters and do what you want with them, but don't take my guests. So he was kind of, you know, not 100%, you know, he wanted to be kind, but he didn't know where to draw the lines. Anyway, the angels tell him, listen, we're here to destroy Sodom. You want to get out of here? You have merits because of Avram. You can leave. Your wife can leave. Your daughters can leave. Their husbands can come with them. The husbands didn't believe it. But Lot is finally able to leave with his wife and two daughters to escape Sodom. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, God says, I'm going to destroy Sodom and I'm not going to tell my beloved Avram about this. I changed his name to Avraham. That means he's a father of a multitude of nations. Can I do such a big world event without letting him know? So Hashem says, I don't want you to know I'm going to have to destroy Sodom. So what does Avraham do? He starts to pray. He says, God, please, maybe there might be some wicked people going to destroy the whole city. If there's 50 tzaddikim, are you going to destroy the city? God says, no, if there's 50 tzaddikim, I won't destroy the city. But then he says, there's in 50, how about 45, how about 40, 30, 20, 10? No, it's nothing. Now remember, these are the opposite of Avram. They're undoing all his work. But Avram says, you know what, but they're still your creatures. Please have mercy on them. So God says, no, sorry. So Avram goes to sleep. Avram gets up.
God says yes, but
he couldn't find him, right? Now, next morning, Avram gets up, but before he knows it, he looks over the horizon. Sodom is sulfuric acid, fire. It's already been overturned. Now, very interesting thing. At that point, the Torah says, Avram gets up, and the first time in the Torah, it's the first time the Torah uses the word prayer. Avram gets up and prays in the same spot that he prayed the day before. Now, the day before, when he prayed, the Torah didn't call it prayer. But after it was destroyed, it was called prayer. which teaches us a very, very valuable lesson. That when you pray to God, you don't always pray to get things. Because this was after Sodom was destroyed already. And after Sodom was destroyed, he still prayed to God. Which teaches us, you know, that prayer isn't just getting your wish list, but prayer is connecting to Hashem and connecting to every aspect of Hashem. And even when you see that Hashem is destroying and doing things that you don't like, you still talk to God, you still pray to God. Now, and that this was the moment when Avram established the prayer of Shacharis. The morning prayer was now established by Avram. And we learn a lot of laws about prayer. He davened in the same place as the day before. We learned that a person, when he goes to shul, should have a set place every day. Same seat every day, unless there's a guest, whatever. Avram set up the morning prayer that corresponds to kindness. Because why? Because in the morning, when the sun comes up in its all its glory, the beginning of the day is always, you know, you need a lot of energy to get that sun to come up. It's the spiritually kindest part of the day, and Avram relates to that concept. So we learn a lot about prayer, that even when, you know, yeah, you'd ask a person, you're going to pray, but I can tell you in advance, you're not going to get what you want. Are you still going to pray? Many people will say no, but that's not what prayer is. Prayer is connecting to God. So even when things aren't going your way, and you know they're not going to go your way, you're still connecting to God, and that's what Avram taught us over here.
I don't mean to contradict the Rav.
Yes?
It doesn't say Avram. Rav just said
sure
it the
does.
First time.
You gotta know the Medrash.
Yeah, well,
it says Vayamod. No. The Gemara says, it says Vayamod, he stood. He stood. The Gemara says, that's Amida. Right? The Amida is the prayer. It says Vayamod, he stood. Standing is an expression, there's 10 expressions of prayer. One of them is called standing. So he stood in the place where he was the day before. He stood, he did the Amida. And that's what the Amida.
That's
an expression of prayer. There's 10 expressions. If you look at the commentators, have to mention it there. It's got to be there, and that's what he prayed. Now, good. So now you think his prayers didn't help? It did help. What did the prayers help? Lot was saved. You think Lot was saved in his merit? Lot was saved in Avram's merit. Lot had a few merits too, but not enough to get saved. So therefore, there were 5 cities of Sodom, with Sodom, Gomorrah, and a few other cities, a bunch of cities. They get all overturned. So that way you see, when you go to Israel now, and you see the Dead Sea did not exist prior to this destruction of Sodom. Where you saw the Dead Sea, there were 5 thriving metropolitan cities. Just like 5 boroughs of New York. Okay? You have 5 metropolitan cities, lush, beautiful cities, and God just turned them all over. Just turned them all over, and utter, you go to Eretz Yisrael, that's the place of utter desolation. And what happens, you see the Jordan River coming from the north, starting way up in Lebanon, all the snow melts, and you have this river coming all the way down to Israel, and all that river went right into Sodom. That's why it was so lush. It was the river basin. The crops were unbelievable. So now what happens, that spot where that river basin all of a sudden gets turned upside down and all that salt gets brought up from the earth, now all that water just goes right in and it becomes the Dead Sea. That's where the Dead Sea comes from. So now, quickly, just to finish up the second point. So now Lot runs away, his wife runs away, the 2 daughters are running away. The angel said, listen, you're lucky to get out with your lives. Don't you dare look back and take a peek, because you don't deserve to see everybody else dying because you're not that much better than them. We're told Lot's wife turns around and she turns into a pillar of salt. Why salt? Because even when Lot would have guests, she wouldn't give him salt. In other words, she was kind, but not full. You know, you can give a person a good piece of chicken, but without that salt, salt like brings out the taste, right? Makes the taste better. You know, she always would cut corners. So she turned into a pillar of salt, and there's tradition that tells us where that pillar is, if it's true or not, I don't know. But you go on the tours, they'll say this is the pillar of salt of earth. Yeah. Anyway, now, Lot, so now there's destruction going all over the place. This is like Mama's like a Spielberg movie. Like, they're just getting out alive. Everything's falling apart. So they go to a little mountain, a cave that's just at the edge. It's still in the Sodom region, and that part is saved. Now they see, as far as they know, there's an unbelievable earthquake. There's no telecommunications, no CNN, there's no radios, nothing. They think the world is destroyed. Remember, the ancients didn't know how far their world went. It went as far as you could see and what you knew. So they thought it was a cataclysmic thing to the point where the whole world was destroyed. It's got Lot and his two daughters, and the world's destroyed. So what do the daughters do? The daughters say, listen, we have to do what we have to do. The world will not continue to exist. Now, what about Avram? You think Avram? Well, there's no way of finding out. So the daughters say, listen, we have to get our father drunk. And the older daughter gets the father drunk to the point where he doesn't know what's going on. She sleeps with him, and she's able to get pregnant from him. The next night, the younger daughter gets him drunk, sleeps with him, and gets him pregnant. Now, these two girls, these two young women, have children. And the first one has a child, and she calls her, the child, Moav, which means Me'av, from daddy. Which is a little bit of a chutzpah kind of name to give. From daddy. The younger one calls him Ammon, his nation, which is a little bit more modest. Now, you're wondering, what is going on over there? Why is the Torah telling us this story? This is a very, very important story. Because Ammon and Moab become very important nations later on. These women meant for the sake of heaven. They meant for the sake of heaven because they thought there were no other people in the world. If you think there's other people in the world, what are you going to do? You have to continue the world. Now, what happens is, later on, years later, a descendant of Ammon, a woman by the name of Naaman, she marries into the family of King Solomon. And we know, of course, from the descendant of Moab, the famous Ruth, the book of Ruth. She comes from the nation of Moab. So these nations, they come from Lot. Lot has something to contribute to the Jewish people. See, the Jewish people have a lot of good qualities, but they still have to borrow a little from the non-Jews of the world. Certain qualities we don't have as good as others. And I'm going to tell this to you quickly, and you're going to say, what? But it's true. Jews are very humble people, believe it or not. We are really very humble people. What we lack, and we had traditionally lacked, now things are a little bit different. We lacked a certain degree of chutzpah. And when the time came when we'd need a king, we didn't have people with the qualities to be a king. A certain king has to have a certain, as they say in Yiddish, stolz. You gotta like hold of yourself. You have to have like good self-esteem. And the first Jewish king was King Saul from the tribe of Benjamin. He didn't have any self-esteem. He couldn't push people around. He couldn't tell people what to do. Wasn't a very good king. You need a king who's got the right personality, who's not afraid to take bold moves, to have a little bit of chutzpah. Chutzpah, the nation of Moab, had a tremendous dose of it. Now, to the extreme, unfortunately. If you can get a righteous convert coming out of these nations who has the right amount of chutzpah in a good way, that is what we're going to need to make kings out of. So Ruth carries the pureness of a good, holy chutzpah, so to speak, and she becomes a great-grandmother of King David. So it's a very important story. We'll find out throughout the book of Bereishis, whenever there's an important union between man and woman that's important in a step towards the messianic dynasty, it has to come in a superficially ugly way. Because we got to keep the Yetzer Hara away from trying to stop these things. Anything good's going to happen, the Yetzer is going to try to stop it. If it looks bad, the Yetzer says, fine, let it happen. So this that looks very ugly and not so pretty, but ultimately, there was a tremendous amount of sacrifice for these women. They really did not want to sleep with their father. They weren't that kind of people, right? But they realized we had to do it for the benefit of mankind. So in the throes of this destruction, where it looked like Abram's prayers weren't even listened, but the fact that Lot and his daughters survived, that ultimately was the seed of descendants many years later on that would be converts to Judaism, who would bring in qualities of kingship that would be necessary for the Jewish people. It happens here on the fields of Sodom. Okay, so we leave you at this point. Next time we meet, we'll let you know exactly, either it's going to be January, let's see, not the 5th, the 3rd. One second. You got the 8th is the wedding. The 8th is Sunday, 9th, 10th, 11th. We'll either start January 11th or 18th. So just check your emails. We'll have the next 2 weeks off for sure. and either the 11th or the 18th we will resume. So have a wonderful Hanukkah.